When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah,
all for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Horton's. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Larry Raggio. Larry, good evening, good afternoon, rather. My day's been all over the place, man, but how are you?
Yeah, very well, yes. So we finally got there.
And I'm, you know, it's one I've been looking forward to for quite a while now. So, I mean, before we deep dive into the conversation and then, you know, explore your journey, maybe just a bit of an insight around who you are, what you currently do, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, cool. Larry Raggio, as you said, that's my name. Everybody in the world knows me as Larry, and other name is Lanry. So, Larry Lanry, I don't mind. Yes, it's about football, isn't it? I'm a goalkeeping coach by profession. Parents from Nigerian descent, and spent most of my life here, born here, born and bred. Experience being around the world, gone different places and stuff. However, how did it start? How did I the coaching journey start? Obviously, like everybody else's story. It started from being disappointed, not being able to be a player, and then stumbling into some favor, I'll call it favor, someone who believed in me and never knew anything in me and thought that through my character, I think they probably just looked at my character and thought, he might be a good coach somewhere down the line. And that's in the name of Vic Akers. The Arsenal guy who gave me a breakthrough at Arsenal, started at the Arsenal Ladies Academy, and the rest was history, to be honest. Yeah.
Just on that note, I often get into a lot of conversations with people, and one of the things people often say, you seem quite curious, you're always thinking, yes. So, you know, you've got me thinking already on a couple of things. First of all, you talk there about being given that chance. Was it always goalkeeping coaching that you wanted to go into, or did you just start out wanting to be a coach in the first instance? And then secondly, what is it about goalkeeping coaching specifically which has kept you hooked?
Yeah, I was a goalkeeper myself. I played for Enfield Town, and I think that was the highest level that I played at. Well, it was becoming semi-professional in Nigeria before I left. I was born here, as I said, went back to Nigeria, picked up football there when I left school, played a decent level at that time, around 89, around those kind of times, 85, from 85 to 89. Played in goal then, felt that I had something, especially when I was crossing over. But as you know, parents never wanted, they used to think then that football, you're not going to make a career out of football. You've got to become an engineer or something like that. And I tried it. I did try air conditioning and refrigeration. I tried it at that level, and I was pretty good at it. And I just felt that it wasn't quite for me. That's why I used to leave home and go and play football. And then I got called into a team called Von, which is a vegetable oil of Nigeria Limited. And that they played a decent level then. I played in goal. There was no coaching around at that time, you could imagine. And I felt that I was pretty good. And being a tall guy, getting in the way of the ball and stuff like that is something that I enjoyed. You know, I really enjoyed getting hit with the ball, coming home with injuries and all that. Every time you come home, dad just chases you out again. Where are you coming from and all that kind of thing. But it was one of those ones that it just stayed with me. And I believe in purpose, you know, and I believe in sometimes when you're looking for your purpose comes from something that you love and something that no one can take away from you, you know. So as much as I was being beaten with a belt and growing up, you don't play football, your legs were all bruised and all that. It still followed me until I travelled, until I came back and all that. And even when I look at it now, and you'll see further down the line in this interview, be something whereby that purpose will come up again because you're now developed, you've now become experienced, you've become someone where you feel that now, yes, it did start at football, but the people that you're meeting, it's beyond football. You know, and that's where the purpose for me comes into it. And yeah, and that's how it will happen for me.
So let's talk about experiences then, because obviously for a lot of us, when we're coming into our coaching journeys, and, you know, we often start with maybe replicating or implementing things that we went through as players. So what was delivered to us? And obviously you shared some insight there on your journey that, you know, there wasn't really goalkeeping coaching taking place. So what, where did you begin forming your ideas on what it looked like to work with a goalkeeper?
I think it was being exposed, really. After I was given a chance, I think for me, where it really got, I'm an Arsenal supporter. Even though when I was growing up, I was a Stoke City supporter. I don't know where the Arsenal came from. It must have been somewhere. And then not being able to play anymore, and then being introduced to someone who's at Arsenal. And then, so that for me was kind of, listen, I need to give everything back in regards, because this is where I want to, this is something that I've been dreaming about. Even though it was at the ladies, I've never feel that I'll get the key to unlock that. And I find myself within, I'm in the area where I'm seeing top players, and I'm seeing, and this is the beginning of my career for me. So I want to give it everything. So around that time, I had to do a lot of education. I did a lot of things for free. I used to do the girls academy. This is, I'm talking about now, 99 98 99 2000. I used to do it free of charge. Now I used to leave there, and then I'll go to, remember, Farm Road, Lewis. I'll drive there free of charge. So I feel it's my philosophy was built from being determined, from being wanting to learn, being around people like Alex Welsh, being the Mark Drabwell, is that all those kind of things. And another good guy for me who really gave me a lot of knowledge was Dick Bates. He was regiment, you know. So there you learn discipline, you learn timekeeping, you learn the balls need to be in place. You learn all those kind of things for me. It really, I think it really gave me a strong foundation to want to learn more, to want to go and do more. So the London Coaches Association, which we used to have, it used to be, I used to look forward to it every week because I wanted to learn. I used to go to all kinds of developments that was happening. And I think from there, meeting a lot of people, I think everything together, the holistic side of things became, it became something that is now, I can now say, is what I believe in as goalkeeper.
It's interesting, you know, again, you bring up so many different points there, and it's just making me think again, like, to start with, obviously, the piece around the volunteering, right? I think that's one of the things that a lot of coaches coming through now, especially in the younger years, are really finding challenging to actually have to go out and volunteer to get that experience. But then they're also then surprised when they're not getting opportunities to potentially progress their careers in what they consider to be a meaningful role, if you like. It's interesting. You know, I'm working with a young coach at the moment who I've been mentoring, and I always say to him, like, okay, it's great that you're working out, you're getting different experiences, but because of the environments you're working in, if I compare it to my own journey, I feel like you've been robbed of some experiences which give you a grounding. And it brings me on to the second point that you talk about there, about having you, although you haven't necessarily referred to them as such there, but effectively having mentors or experienced people that you can kind of work with and work alongside to really build your knowledge base, right? And the interesting part, I mean, I was just having a conversation with someone just yesterday and another conversation the day before, the importance of the coaches having good organization. Like you said, where are the balls? Where's your markings? Where, you know, all of that, what we might overlook as basic stuff, but actually transform and give you a good foundation to work from as a coach in terms of how you design your practices, how your session runs and all those little things, right? So there's a few different things I want to kind of tap into there. So just one, what's your view on, I guess, the generation of coaches that we've got coming through now and their appreciation for maybe those voluntary environments? And for those that are considering it, what are the key things that you think they maybe need to be looking for in terms of whether this is the right environment to volunteer in to start with? And then I'll follow up with some other questions after that.
It's a good point, and it's almost as if the game, you have to pay your dues in a sense, and once you have to, that mentality has to get stuck in your head. If this is for you, because listen, the game is saturated, you know. So for the fact that the game is saturated, you need to have number one, you have to have the knowledge. Number two, you have to have been around, and you have to have the normal stuff. I'm a goalkeeping coach. However, there was times when I had to go out and just put cones down, and you can easily understand that. You're getting frustrated, but you're earning the right to assess someone. You know, you're earning that right to assess knowledge. And as the saying is, knowledge is power, you know. And if you are acceptable or allow yourself to be vulnerable to be able to gain that access, then you're halfway down the line, because that will continue throughout your learning, in regards to even when you become more mature, you still know that. For me, for instance, you know, I come to you all the time in regards to when you're putting sessions on, and I'll have to drive miles, but I still know that as much as you're younger than me, you've still got something that I need, and I need to be open to that. Even though I'm in my 50s, and the open mindset, what you said, what is it that they need? They need to have an open mindset. They can't say, oh, I'm better than him, I'm better than him, or I'm doing that. I'm learning every day. As much as I'm even going into West Ham, I stay behind sometimes now, and I look at sessions that the managers are putting on. And I'm grateful to have that access to be able to do that, even of where I've gone now. To be honest, it took me an enormous amount of years before I started to understand that, hold on, I'm looking at people who've got experience. Now I've got experience, so I can't be selfish. I now need to be giving something back. You know, I now need to be giving something back. Because, again, you can get lost on the, I want to gain experience again, without knowing that you yourself, your experience, and you need to, you know, you need to give something back. So I think it's come with age too, that you're aware of what you want and how you want to get there, you know. And regards to, as I said before, sometimes I used to put cones down, and I look back at the cones, and the lines wiggly woggly. And I'm thinking, do you know what I mean? Right,
I'm
right
still now, doing that now, bro.
Yeah, I can put the cones down now in a better shape. It's still wiggy woggly, but you're still thinking that, you know, it's still a little bit straighter than when you started.
It's straight depending on what angle you're looking at it from.
It does. Yeah. So, yeah, all those little things, they make the holistic person that you want to be.
No, it's really important point. And I think, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself, like, I think when people ask me, how long have you been coaching? I say, well, I've been coaching 15 years. And I sometimes have to remind myself, I've been coaching for 15 years. And I'm fortunate enough that I've had that experience, 15 years of experience, and I'm only 33, right? And then it makes me think, wow, I've still got time to go. I've still got time to go because, you know, some people over there probably have only got maybe half the experience that I've got, and they're probably 10, 15 years older than me even. So I think, you know, I couldn't consider myself really fortunate because obviously that was never planned. I wasn't planning on sitting there, like I said, 15 years ago. When I'm 33, I want to say I've got 15 years experience. It just happens, right? And then, you know, in that then, kind of linking into my previous points that you made was, it is something I'm really big on. Obviously, mentoring, working with other experienced coaches, and quite rightly, like you said, it's not just about the age and the experiences that you have to kind of maybe potentially learn off others, but actually, it's a two-way process. Because in the same way that you're saying that, you know, you might come to, you know, we might have conversations around coaching, and it might be you engaging in a conversation with me, but there's equally something I can take away from you, right? So I guess from that perspective, what would your advice be to those coaches who are out there now? Because something that you touched on really importantly was about understanding knowledge of the game. And that knowledge of the game, for those that haven't been around certain environments at certain levels, you might not know what you're missing. And if you don't know what you're missing, how are you going to know that you need to search for it? Does that make sense? So then in the point of maybe mentorship and finding experienced coaches to work alongside, what would your advice be to those coaches listening to this now thinking, right, where do I start by finding the right mentors?
I look at things and I kind of think, when I'm looking at people, there are certain people you've got access to that you know that you can get access to. And there are certain people who you might be seeing, only see them on TV, then think that, oh, I ain't got access to them. I think the first thing that you need to know, you need to know what you want. That's the first thing first. You need to know what you need to be written down. This and this is what I'm looking for. So you might not get the whole package in regards to this and this is what I'm looking for. Then you kind of know what it looks like when you see it. So, for instance, I'm after someone who's the first time I came to see you and stuff, and I kind of saw that the knowledge that you've got in regards to presentation and stuff like that. I looked at it and I thought, listen. When I look at different people and I look at different styles, the people who I look at in regards to presentation, which are not football related. Someone like, I look at Obama when he's speaking, when he's talking, and his body language, and his kind of, so I haven't got access to him, but I can read his books, I can go back to videos.
What you're saying, I'm the next best thing, yeah?
But I can then see, I know what I want. So you don't need to be Obama, but I can still see the presentation skills that I feel that I can add to it. And it doesn't necessarily mean you standing up there. It could be a bit of banter that you throw in at within stuff, which attracts people. Because all we're talking about, we're working with people. We're in the people's business here. And it's very important that we get that attention. And because people can easily disregard you, or if you're talking too much, or even if you're making sense and you're saying too much, people disregard it. I had to learn. I had to learn that when I'm talking to people, I'm engaging with them, with my body language, the whole of me. But again, I'm not going to be Yasser. I'm not going to be Obama. I'm going to be Larry. You know, so I've got to understand that I'm not going to be anybody else, but the whole me is what I need to use and tap into these people and kind of use that to become me. And then what you find out is you become unique.
It's a great point, but, you know, I guess my mind's going to the idea of, well, do you only get to that point of assessment and reflection with age and maturity? Because, you know, like I said, a younger coach coming into this, not necessarily a younger coach, newer coaches, which may be younger or could be older, right? But I would like to think that everyone who's engaging in formal qualification, especially as coaches, they want to get better, right? But you said something very interesting, obviously. You said, you know, if I need to know what I'm going after. I need to know what I want. But this is part of the challenge, right? Especially for coaches coming through now and the younger coaches, where you could argue that the way that coach education, coach development has gone, it's improved in many ways. But some would say it's maybe lacked a little guidance. And, you know, it's very easy to turn around and say, well, we've all been there in some way, shape, or form. But I think there's a real difference in terms of what we mean when we actually say is, "Oh, I'm going to go and observe a UEFA A licensed coach. I'm going to go and observe a UEFA B licensed coach, or I'm working with a B licensed coach." But in my opinion, the B licensed coach of today isn't the B licensed coach of 10 years ago. So, from that stance, is how does one begin to assess whether someone's qualification or someone's experience is a good experience to learn from, if that makes sense?
I think first things first. I think the first thing you need to do, regardless of, I think the first thing is knowing what you want. And then I think it's down to the person that... Once you've got what you've written down, this is where I want to go. This is where, so you know, you already know what you want, and then it's about finding that actual person. I think it's got nothing to do with qualifications, by the way. You know, it hasn't got anything to do with qualifications. It's got a lot to do with your how you want to carry yourself, how the knowledge of the game. What are you doing outside of the person? I know it's really hard. You mentioned something in regards to the B licenses and that. For me, I look at it now, there are a lot of coaches out there who don't even have licenses and stuff, and they are good coaches, and they're good coaches, and there are a lot of parents who help within the community who are good coaches, who I've seen, who their manner are really good. So if you know what you want, I think people you meet on these little courses and going here, there, they could be a handful. There's a guy that I met on your course. He still calls me. The questions he asks me sometimes. But what I think is that he feels that he's got access to me because I passed my number onto him, and he just asked me the questions that he asks me sometimes. But he's searching, and he wants to get better. I know he feels that from where he's from, he's got the connections and stuff. But some of them. They want to kind of run before they even crawl. They want to run before they crawl because they see that there's a lot of some of them. Their motives are there's a lot of money in football and I want to get there because I've got access to that. I've got that access to this. I've got access to that. That's why I said it's important that you know what you want. Is it the money that you're after? A lot of parents who come to me with their player, with their goalkeepers and stuff, it's as if they want to say to me, I can see it on their face. It's as if they want to say to me, get him into an academy for me, please. So the first thing that I say to them that, listen, this might not happen. So, I've said it this week. I've said it so many times this week, and I've spoken to parents this week where I've said to them that, listen, make sure your child, as young as they are, know what they want. The moment, because listen, I'll take your money. I'm happy you can come and give me £50 every week. I'll take it. But your child needs, the day he comes home and he says he doesn't want this anymore, you've got to be ready to say, don't live it for him. Because a lot of parents are living it for their children, you know? And as young as, listen, through my experience, I've seen from working with a seven-year-old who's been the top at their game, and they come 10, 11, 12, they don't want to play football anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, again, we need to be really... And that's why I think, for me, it's not really about how do they assess. It's about, first of all, really taking years to understand what you want. Because as I said, when I came back from Nigeria and came back to England, because it was in my head all the time, study. The first degree I went to was mechanical engineering, and I'm looking at myself and thinking, what am I doing here? You know, I took the grant. Yeah, I got a grant. I took it, and that was fine for me. You know, but I didn't finish it. The second one I did, sports psychology, because I knew I wanted to know more about people within what I'm doing. I knew what I wanted. Listen, I was at uni, and I could sleep at uni. I put three chairs together, and I sleep on it because I knew what I wanted, and I had to get through that. I had to get a first class, you know. And so first of all, we need to go back to what we really want, and I can't stress that enough. Yes, honestly, the second part of it is, how do I get a mentor after you know what you want? Because you've got to communicate that to your mentor.
Well, there's two things. I think, first of all, that in what you've just said about they've got to know what they want, and it's literally the conversation I have with parents all the time. And like you said, I've had those conversations where you can literally see it's on their face. Like, come on, what do I need to do to help you get them into an academy? And the one thing I always go back to is, listen, I can help your child become a better player because of what I feel I can offer them. But the one thing I can never change is whether they will want this journey or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they don't want it, it's never going to happen. Even if they're good enough, it's just not going to happen. They have to want it. And even if they want it, there's no guarantees we can get there.
Yes.
Right?
It's the willpower, yeah.
And it's got to be there from the get-go. And it's, they can't kind of want it, and they can't want it a little bit more than something else. It has to be the only thing they want in their life.
Yeah, you know what? Right? There's a second part to it, you know? Knowing what you want, if you know what you want, then you know, then it's about finding out what it takes.
Exactly.
To get there.
Exactly.
And then what it takes, and then we can then move on to the person who's going to help us, and then moving on.
110%. And it's the thing I always say, like, you know, with every situation, especially when I'm working with players and coaches, I said, if we don't know the problem that we're dealing with, we're never going to be able to find the solutions for it, right? And it like links into your second point about finding that mentor, right? And then the reason why I asked the question, because because of the work that I do, I sometimes do get, or frequently do get messages around, well, you know, can you be my mentor? And the first question I always go back to them with is, why me? Why do you want me to mentor you? Because I want them to know that it's not, yes, it's, you know, there's an opportunity to get some support and guidance and whatever that might look like. I'm willing to, like you said, give back. Yes. But you need to know why you're coming to me. Because if you don't know why you're coming to me, then I don't believe my information is going to be suitable for you.
Absolutely.
Right? Absolutely. Whereas some people just look, oh, you know, this person's got this qualification, or they're doing this role, or they're doing that, so they must know what they're doing. Yes, but my style might not be suitable for you.
Might not be.
And I think that bit's really, really important. You know, as someone who's listening to this, maybe in the position where you are someone else's mentor, have you ever questioned why they want you to be their mentor? And if you're the mentee in this process, have you ever questioned why you went after that specific mentor and whether that mentor was the right one for you?
Yeah.
And not basing it just on they've been coaching for 20 years, or they've been coaching for 40 years, or they've got an A license, or they've got a pro license, or whatever that looks like. Because quite right, like you said, that's only a small part of it. And in many cases, it doesn't mean much. So I think it's really important for, you know, people to kind of reflect on that piece. But I want to bring it back to you now, Larry. Obviously, you know, you mentioned at the top of the conversation that you've been, you know, you started your journey working at Arsenal Ladies as a goalkeeping coach. Just talk to us a little, give us a bit of a timeline around how that journey's developed over the years. And, you know, you mentioned there 1999, 98 even, right? It's the best part of 25 years, right? Now, that's a long time. And, I know that even though we've probably only really known each other for a matter of months now, it feels like we've known each other for years, and I think it's probably because of some of the people that we you know, we've also connected with, you know, I've heard some stories about the generation of coaches that you came through, and just, you know, maybe just describe to us a little bit about your timeline of your journey and some of the challenges that maybe you faced in your journey and how you've seen that time change.
Yeah, we can be here all day, but I'll try and briefly. If you need to stop me in between, just stop me so I don't go. Sometimes when I get this question, I just go all over the place. But yeah, it's been an interesting time. When people ask me that question and I look back at it, when I'm working at West Ham now, Billy's the head of goalkeeping at that thing. And when he describes me, when we do things and he describes me and he says, listen, we've got experience here. We've got people who've really played at the high of the game there. And when he says experience, I look back and I think, wow. And then there was a day when one of the guys asked me about how coaching was back then compared to today. And I thought, you don't want to start me on that because it's totally different. But yeah, going back to the question, what you've actually asked, to pinpoint it, I started at the ladies academy. I started with the really, really young ones. So seven, they were at the center of excellence then. It was called the center of excellence. And we had the privilege of training at Highbury. We were training at Highbury then. We used to go in there all the time and train in the indoor sports hall. There was an indoor sports hall there. The girls used to come, and I used to think, girls, how, even when it first came up, how will it work? And then I started to, over the years, over the first, second years, I understood there were some good talent. There were lots of talents. There were talents in there, and that's where I think it all started, and that's why you can see where the women's game is today, you know. However, I think I had a good kind of 6-7 years until 2000, maybe 5 years until 2005. I then Vic Akers again then stepped me up into the kind of, we'll call that the PDP kind of stage now, and I started working with him directly. So I was working with Claire Whitley, who's the overseer of the whole academy then, at the beginning. And then when Vic took over, and Vic called me to come and do the traveling and do everything that I did with him, it was a different ball game. I worked with some top goalkeepers. I had the opportunity of working with Amunia. So I did some work with Amunia, even because that only gave me that opportunity because I was in the environment. Even though I was working with ladies, I had the opportunity to work with Amunia. I did a lot of stuff in the community too, whereby grassroots coaches were coming in and I was putting on sessions for them. And this was based at the training ground, which is the Arsenal training ground now. So it really, I was really exposed to kind of like the top of the game kind of thing. I would be in the midst of top players like Kanu, you know, like a whole heap of players where we'd be kind of like chatting as friends. So it really built a base for me. And again, sometimes when we're in these environments, you think about friends for life. You build relationships where these relationships are going to be relationships that are going to, they're going to shape you. These are relationships now where some of these people, I could just pick up the phone and I could call them. So, and this is where I talked about our purpose and our journey in life and where it takes us, and you know, so it's important that we're aware that we don't just focus on football, you know, that we focus on the bigger picture. Yes, football is the vehicle that has driven us. That's why we're here. That's why we've got here. But you never know where you as a person, your personality will take you. Because, again, within my experience along that time, it always used to be, again, about personality, about how you relate to people and how people see you, because I think it's a bigger picture than anything. Even to be the best goalkeeper in the world, if you haven't got, we talk about it now, if you haven't got the personality, you don't get in the building. These are kind of things. So again, wherever you want to go, it's about working on you. I'm not saying you can't change your personality, but you can learn things. You can learn things to make you a better person, better being better approached when you're being approached, so that people can see you. Because it's all about what people see, you know. Even though we say it's not, it's about what people see, and then it's about the knowledge that you hold. So yeah. So after coming in and then working with Vic, he exposed me to a lot of things. In 2007, we won the FA Cup together, you know. So that for me, it was big. I worked with an international goalkeeper in the name of Emma Burns. She's right now. I think she's with the Ireland. I worked with a lot of goalkeepers too. Rebecca Spencer. I think she's still playing her game. I took Rebecca from the very young age all the way up to kind of first team football. So I think I've been there, done it, seen it, and in a sense, I feel I still got so much to give, because I don't want to be selfish in regards to just holding on to the experience I've had. It's now we're in a different era. Football's moving on. In about 10 years' time, my era was kind of really being like the Bobby Moore era kind of thing. In a sense, it's something that we've got to be aware of, but it's all a stepping stone of making the game that we love excel to wherever it can go to.
So let's just pick up on that last point. You know, excel wherever it can go to. Where has it gone to since you began your journey? Because obviously, look, in the 15 years that I've been coaching, it's massively changed. And I can only imagine it's probably even changed even more in the last 25, the additional 10 years that you've been coaching, right? So I guess, you know, where has coaching gone from being in 1999 to where you began your journey to where we are now? How have things changed? What are the things that you would say have stood the test of time? And what would you say are the things that actually have really brought things forward and evolved things even more?
I think we need to be careful, you know, because where we need to really be careful is the environment that we live in, me as in me, you, and not be selfish and look at football. We keep saying football is a universal game. And if we're saying football is a universal game, that question needs to expand universal, rather than us thinking that our mindset needs to change from the fact that football was created here and football's coming home and it's coming home and it's coming home and it's coming home and it hasn't come home yet. So we have to look in to a bigger picture. Yes, we're the foundation of how the game started. When we look at it, we put two sticks together, we started kicking the ball about, and then now it's now evolved. We have to look at coaching. We have to look at culture. We have to look at culture. We have to look at, when I say culture, I'm thinking around goalkeeping specific. Is there room for a tall goalkeeper? Is there room for a shorter goalkeeper? That's what that's in that area is where I'm talking about. And that's why I'm expanding it. And when you look at it, we have to be careful of not always thinking that what we do is the best. And that's why I'm at a point in my life now where I feel like I need to expand my going South America, going Europe, going see how they do things. Dino Kiev, the other day when I went to, it's just like a development kind of coaching thing. It blew me away what they were talking about, which is totally different. They will accept a 6 foot, 5 foot, 11 goalkeeper within their midst. If he's good enough, if he can move his feet, because, you know, so now football, those days were like, I remember working in an academy where it would be, okay, don't bring any goalkeeper that's not 5 foot 11, well, 6 foot two. Don't bring any goalkeeper that's not 6 foot two here. So what about, and I used to see so many goalkeepers, 5 foot 11, 6 foot on the dot, that were amazing. And have we deprived those goalkeepers from having a career? Have we? In regards to, you know, because if we had like a mentor and said, listen, in UK we don't do that because you've got to be that. Go abroad. Go Denmark. Go. Would they have had?
No, I think it's a really good point. I think, sorry to pause you there. I think it's I think that's one of the challenges that we have in this country, though, isn't it? In not just
you
in
can
playing.
Look back at that and look at from the players' point of view too.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, that's what I'm pointing. Yeah, players and coaches, right, alike. Like, because there is that, I don't know if it's directly linked to it, but there is that kind of perception of, yeah, look, this is where football was born, essentially. So I feel like we're seeing changes, especially at the top level now.
Absolutely.
We're seeing changes in that because there's more people willing to go abroad and get those experiences. But I think historically, it's the mindset of, no, we're in England, we're English. So why are we going anywhere else to get experience? But I think it just makes it, I liken it sometimes to the challenge of us as coaches living in London, right? You know, for those that are trying to become career coaches and working in the professional game, if you like, you've got in London, you've got all the clubs are big. You've got Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, Palace, Fulham, all the Cat One clubs. Then you've got, you know, Brighton round the corner. Then you've got Watford round the corner. Then you've got QPR. You've got obviously the smaller club like your Leighton Orient, your Brentford now, exactly. So like there's an influx of clubs in London. For the coaches that are oversaturated in London already, and then you've got people wanting to come into London just to get into these same clubs, right? So I kind of liken it to that sometimes because there is, it's like, well, I'm in London, I've got nine or 10 clubs here I can go work at. Yeah, but those same 9 or 10 clubs is where everyone wants to work at, right? So there is that challenge. I think sometimes you have to take that chance and take that risk of going somewhere else, building that experience in an environment that's going to give you an opportunity, right? Give you an opportunity to grow and develop. And it might not be in the direction you necessarily want to, but you might find that actually by engaging in another environment, going out and trying something different, taking that risk, that a new pathway is opened up for you. And I think the same thing, you know, it works for players as well. And we see, like I said, you know, some of the top players now, they have, especially English ones, they've got those experiences going abroad. Like, you know, if you even look at how successful Jadon Sancho was when he went over to Dortmund. How successful Jude Bellingham was when he went to Dortmund. Now he's landed himself a job in a role in Real Madrid. You know, those experiences when those players are going abroad does add something else that they're not going to get here. So you know, it's definitely something to consider. So even for coaches, right, going out, get your experience, and bring those experiences back here because it's an Absolutely. Experience that the people here Yes. won't have.
Absolutely.
And that's the bit that makes you unique, right?
That's why I said that's. It goes back again to what do you want, knowing what you want, and then knowing, having the determination to go and get it, to drive you to go and get it. Those players who went abroad, who was it that laid that foundation of going abroad? It was only one by one players that were going abroad. Now it's become something where players, we're coming out of our comfort zone. You know, and trying something else. And that's the only way we can. And that's part of what I said. If we go out and we bring a bit of that home, you know, bring it back to us, even though we're taking bits of our English culture to them too. And they're seeing that too. You know, so it's very important. I think the biggest point the biggest takeaway point is, it's in order, is knowing what you want if you're in football, regardless of where you start, whether you're a footballer, whether you want to be a coach, knowing what you want, paint the picture. This is what it looks like. These are stages. Then maybe you might then want somebody who you think to say, listen, because you might not know what it takes to get to what you want. You might be asking for £1 million and that £1 million is not in the pocket. So you might have to go and ask Richard Branson, who's got £1 million, like, listen, how do I get, do you understand? And this and this and this is what it takes to get to where you want to go to. Then the question is, you go reassess yourself, am I ready to sacrifice? Am I ready to sacrifice? And then when you're saying you're ready to sacrifice, come and see you, come and see a mentor, come and see someone like myself and say, listen, you'll be ready. Even the questions you want to ask them, they've already got the answers for you. You know, so you'll be well and happy to kind of do mentoring them, you know?
Support them, yeah. So just, you know, let's delve it back into the goalkeeping coaching aspect of things, because there'll be a lot of people listening to this. And it's always interesting for me, because I mean, I've got background and experience working with goalkeepers myself. I don't consider myself a goalkeeping coach, but I would say I've got a fair understanding on how to work with them. So, you know, from your perspective as someone who probably, you know, who's described himself as a goalkeeping coach, where do we start with goalkeepers? Because obviously the biggest challenge, especially for maybe grassroots coaches listening to this, is they might not have access to a goalkeeping coach. They've got a goalkeeper in their sessions. How do we avoid that goalkeeper just becoming a body in the session?
That's key. I think it's moved on a teeny weeny bit now. I don't know what it's like at the grassroots level now. However, I work with a lot of young goalkeepers now, and it's something new for me. And what I have found is that even if it's a young goalkeeper going somewhere, a lot of even with these these exhibition things that they do out there now, sometimes they've got all these players that they want to put on talent, but they haven't got a goalkeeper. So sometimes they want a goalkeeper. They just want someone who can get in goal so that the game can proceed. So it's really that goalkeeping position is so important that it's the game kind of is not there if you don't have a goalkeeper, in a sense. So it's sometimes it's as if people just want, rather than think that, listen, he might be able to have a career here. You hear a lot of stories of, oh, he stuck him in goal, and then he stayed in goal because he thought, we think he's big, he's that, and the stereotype of being big and all that. But how it has to start is, you as a grassroots coach, you need to have, if you're looking for a goalkeeper, you have to have, well, we're saying grassroots, aren't we? So I might be looking at the higher end of things. You have to have influences of what you're looking for. So at clubs,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
So yourself, my philosophy, I have certain influences that I'm looking for in an under, if I'm looking at an under seven or an under six, or I have influences that I'm looking at. Can you jump? Can you turn? Can you twist? Your ABCs. They're not going to be anywhere near there, but at least you're not walking into things and you're not kind of, you're trying to show, yes, I can jump, and see, okay, yeah, I'm not fearful. I'm not. These are the kind of influences that you're looking at, apart from height. When we're talking about universal, we spoke earlier about what football, how is it, how has it gone over the years? We have to look universal. So those are the things that we're looking at first. And then after some years, we can start looking at, are you going to be tall enough? Are you going to be... But it's very important that grassroots coaches understand that you don't just pick someone because you want the game to be able to flow.
It's really important, right? Because sometimes it is as simple as that. They just want someone to be in the goal so they can get the game going.
Yeah.
Right? But I completely agree. Look, without the goalkeeper is the most important position on the pitch. Because guess what? Without a goalkeeper, no one wants to play.
No, there's no game. There's no game. Imagine
right,
a World Cup with no goalkeeper. The game is done.
It's interesting.
You know, I think for me, I think it's the most important position. And I think it's like, I was thinking about it earlier. It's like a wheel, spinning a wheel. The wheel won't spin unless someone spins it. And that's the goalkeeper. The wheel is not gonna go anywhere unless someone is spinning it. It won't. It will just stay stationary. Unless you want people to be on the pitch and just stand there, then so be it. That's how important for me that position is, you know. Mm. And then it determines whether you want to play in that position. Again, throughout my career, I've seen that a lot of goalkeepers come in, then after a certain age, they don't want to play in goal anymore. They've experienced it. It becomes something where it's a lonely place. So again, being lonely, you're then talking about your personality. You're talking about character. You're talking about patience. You're talking about all these things. If you're thinking it's a lonely place, if you really want to be a goalkeeper, you'll find something to do while the ball's not coming to you. And you won't get bored, you know. So I look beyond the technical, tactical, physical side of things. I look at the mental side of things, because that's it's a big part for even a young goalkeeper, even an under six. Sometimes you'll see an under six or an under seven, you throw a ball to, they will catch it like this. You see another under six, you throw a ball to, he'll do that. You know, so how do you get, he'll catch it, but he'll still do that. So it's, again, are you scared of the ball? Can you coach them into being not doing that anymore? Getting their arms out there, to, you know, as they grow up, are they developing in the right way? So for me, I think it's come with experience, where I look more at the psychological side of that position rather than the things that you can change.
So let's just delve into that then. What are some of the key principles that you go after as a goalkeeping coach? Because for me, like, I think it's really interesting that. I talk a lot about when working with goalkeepers, I talk about a lot about the three layers of goalkeeping for me. And I think I mentioned this to you before, in that, you know, the common thing that we say about goalkeepers, oh yeah, they're great shot stopper. Well, that's why they're in goal, right? So that's like the prerequisite.
Keep the ball, right?
Exactly. So I think, you know, and I talk about there being three layers. So, you know, you've got level one, level two, level three. Level one is obviously that shot stopping element. Level two is about the retention of possession, and level three for me is about the use of it.
What's the level three?
The use of that possession.
Yes.
So the maintenance of that possession and the use of that possession, or the retention and the regain of that possession. So in other words, what I'm referring to specifically there is, and it'd be interesting to get your views on this. My observations are is that as good as some goalkeepers are at shot stopping, a lot of them aren't that great at actually catching the ball. And, you know, obviously I'm generalizing here, but that is, for me, that's the next piece. Once you get that shot stopper in the building, can you get them learning how to catch a ball? And it sounds silly because you're talking about goalkeepers here, right? But if they can learn how to catch a ball, then level three becomes a lot easier because they've actually got the ball to play with.
I agree totally. I normally use an analogy, and I always use this analogy, and I say, well, my grandma, she's passed now, but I think if I put my grandma in between two sticks and I hit a ball at her, she will stop it. She did that. She will stop the ball. Do you understand what I mean? And she won't catch it, but she'll get in. It's getting in the way of the ball, really. Getting it. So, and that's shot stopping, because you get in the way of the ball. However, football has moved on from that now. Football has moved on over the years into the technical side of things where you're really breaking things down in it. And I've, and for me, and this is something that I, because I've gone down down now from to the younger age groups, it's something where me as a coach, I've had to have more patience in dealing with what you're just speaking about in regards to making everything fine, making it look good. I'm a good philosopher of moving your feet, and if you can move your feet, then do you know that the only reason why we dive,
it's because we're not moving our feet quick enough.
It's either going into the top bins, or we're not in the, or we're not in the right position. If you can get yourself into the right position,
you won't need to dive.
You don't need to dive.
Literally, it's interesting. So I remember it was last summer or maybe the summer before, I delivered a CPD session around goalkeeping, and it must have been about 90 minutes of practical. And they said, "Yeah, but you haven't covered any saves yet." I said, "Right, because what's the first thing that we say about goalkeepers? Well, they're willing to put their body on the line in front of the ball, so I'm not worried about that. But what I want to do is, can I get them into a position where they don't have to even have to do that?" So the first thing, I spent like the first 30, 40 minutes working with those goalkeepers in that session on just their footwork, just being mobile and comfortable moving around the goal area, right? And as soon as they've nailed that, right, now we can move on to it. So now we've got your footwork in there. Now we can move into your positioning. Once we get your footwork and your positioning right, now we can start talking about the type of saves that you need to make. Because guess what? Some of the saves you might not even need to make anymore.
Absolutely. 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 And I see a lot of goalkeepers nowadays that they will dive. They can dive this high, you know, in regards to make everything look spectacular. But my word to them is, listen, move your feet and make things look easy. Move your feet and make, and a lot of them have got bad footwork. And it then leads into where the game's going now, especially the ones that where the game's going now, where we have to be able to use our feet. You have to be able to use your feet. And it's not just horizontal. It's horizontal, diagonal, vertical movements. So my advice would be, create anything, even away from training, create anything that will give you little men's feet. We're not talking about running distances and stuff. However, if you look at, I think it's 2018 World Cup, and then what was the next one? Was it 2022. If you look at the distances, where goalkeepers now are moving higher up the pitch, within closer to their defenders, it's become longer. It's become the distance where you're away from your goal has become longer within each World Cup. I think it's about 3 or 4 meters in each World Cup, which means you understand where the game's going. The game's going to the extent that probably soon we might have to do those doggy runs that we said goalkeepers don't need to cover that road, because if we're higher up the pitch, then it's a further distance for us to get back. So where the game's going, I'll say, are you a goalkeeper that can keep the ball away from the goal by playing high up the pitch? So you've got a good, go back to that personality again. Can you say, come round? Can you cover? Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm here. Goalkeeper's here if you need. I'm still here. Can you do that to stop the ball going back there? And can you play high? Have you got good feet to do that? Or are you a goalkeeper that feels more comfortable in being back at home and really making those diving saves? So you need to ask yourself, which one are you? And coaches can help you do that. Coaches can look at De Gea. When you look at De Gea is, look at the percentage of saves that he made the last year he was at Manchester United. And then when you compare that to what Edison, who plays higher up the pitch, does, he keeps the ball away from the goal because he's really good with his feet. And knowing that, so we're talking about the higher end now, but if you want to get to that higher end, you've got to start, I can't stress it enough, you've got to start really getting a skipping rope. I tell even a 16 years old at West Ham, get a skipping rope, do that work at home, like boxers, do the work, look at the footwork of the boxers when you're controlling the middle of the ring, look at the footwork, you know, it's all little means you're not going far to get across that, and that comes down to where the goals come to now. When we're saying we're defending the goal or we're defending the space, it's very, very important for us to be able to use our feet.
And I think another key piece in what you talk about, you mentioned about the idea of communication. It's a big one for me. You know, when coaches are telling goalkeepers and even defenders, you know, communicate with your players around you, communicate with your back line and communicate. It's like, yeah, but... And the question I always ask is, hey, okay, I ask pro to coaches when I hear those sorts of things, yeah, but okay, if... Let's just say, for argument's sake, I was happy to communicate. Can you tell me what you'd want me to communicate? Because if you can't tell me what you'd want me to communicate, absolutely, you have no right in telling me I should be communicating.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, in answering that, I'll say from the younger ones, when you're looking at it from the development or from the under 9s to under 12s, FDP phase and YDP, well, moving in from the early development YDP, so between 12 and 14, I think from 14 all the way down, I'm happy with you chatting shit, to be honest. Mind my language. I'm happy with you chatting shit, because what that does, if you're chatting rubbish, it's got your personality out. It's getting you to talk. Do you understand what I mean? It's getting you to start talking, rather than just staying there, staying on your goal line, even when the ball's in the final third, and not saying nothing and not even coming off your line. So the personality comes out of it. You've got to be someone who's chatting, because I can still know a really good goalkeeper now who's not in an academy. Really, only reason why he's not in the academy, because he doesn't talk. Really, really good goalkeeper, you know, but he gets loads, he can move his feet, he can do it, but it, because it's not his personality. So can we really get that out of someone who that's not their personality? Well, you've got to keep telling them. Or again, that's where what you've just said becomes more specific, where I write things down, goalkeepers, left shoulder, right shoulder, I write things down. But again, with the younger ones, do they remember it in the heat of the moment? Those specifics. But with the older ones, you've passed out to the fullback and they've got stuck quarter into the pitch. The first thing they're doing is, you think that they're going to turn back to you. I'm still here. Can you, short and sharp little words. Best thing is to write things down for them so that they can see, especially the younger they are. So they're being specific. There's only one thing that can happen, one or two or three or four different things that can happen within your communication. Right shoulder, left shoulder. Hold, no shot. You know, you're balanced. They can hear your voice. They can hear your voice and be specific. The older they get, the tone then becomes important. The tone then becomes important within the communication. Because if someone's not closing you down, you're saying, where, they're not closing you down. And it's calm. Yeah. Can you, we talk about being the goalkeeper, seeing the whole picture, which we've all heard that before, that, you can see the whole picture. So can we now, the picture we can see, can we portray it into our tone of voice in regards to helping our players who can't see it be calmer? Because if they see that you're calmer, your body shape is calmer, your tone is calmer, they'll be calmer. If you see that, now it's time that, listen, someone's really coming down my throat, and there's a difference between scaring and being loud, because you can easily scare that player. So we've experienced, and the higher you go, you start to master that craft. But I still think that having a personality, being a voice, the best goalkeepers are normally, for me, that I've seen, are the ones who are, when you're looking at them within their peers, they're the kind of leaders, so it comes down to they're, so there's a form of leadership involved. And that's why I said, you look at football can get out the leadership skills in you, in everything, forms of life. Not just that. I know a goalkeeper who used to say, Premier League goalkeeper, who's now he's now the head goalkeeper of his country now. He used to come and say, listen, really, 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 really quiet off the pitch. But he said, the moment he came to England and he knew that bodies are going to be flying in at him and it's so physical, he had to start opening his mouth when he got onto the pitch. You know, he said, so it that brought out the conversation in him. It brought out that, you know, and again, it's back because he knew what he wanted. He knew that this is break. This will either make him or break him if he doesn't open his mouth when he's on the pitch. You know, so it's something that he had to start to invest in himself in. And he became good at it eventually. So you could be good on the pitch. You could be vocal on the pitch. You could do whatever you want off the pitch.
You know, it's really interesting because you talk there about the tone and the specificity. How massive on the specificity of the language, even little things like how can we be very, very specific in our communication as goalkeepers? So if I'm communicating a message, I want it to be clear who I'm communicating a message to. So it won't just be right press. No, it'll be Larry Press.
Yes.
I'm talking to Larry. Absolutely. I'm not talking
you're
about
being,
anyone else. I'm talking to Larry.
You're being specific. You're being exactly. specific. Yes.
And then not just that, being... you know, the general rule of thumb that I try and encourage goalkeepers, especially at younger ages, and obviously they'll develop more experience and more awareness as they go through the process. But it's, I don't want to hear you say it more than once.
Yeah.
Say it loud enough where it only has to be said once.
Clear.
It has to, well, the thing is, it can be clear. But it might be clear and said twice or three times. I don't want that. Say it once, say it loud. Get comfortable with the idea of saying it loud enough where it only needs to be said once. Because what happens is, in my experience with younger goalkeepers and even some of the older ones, in almost, I don't know whether it's a fear, maybe, or maybe, a shyness or some sort, in not wanting to be too loud, they think... They might say, "Here, Larry, press, Larry, press, Larry, press." It's like, listen, that's you've taken 5, 6, 7, 8 seconds to communicate that.
Yes.
Just get it out in one bang.
Bang. Yes.
And it's got to be so clear where, and this is the one thing I always say to goalkeepers: it's got to be so clear that if something goes wrong here, no one can point the finger at you. Because they will.
Yeah, you know a good example of that. I normally say tell my goalkeepers, some of my goalkeepers, even a YDP or a first year scholars, I show them a lot of pictures. I tell them to go and have a look at pictures. And a clear one that I can remember off head is Schmeichel and Dennis Irwin. And Schmeichel used to say, and I remember going to a conference once, and he used to say, listen, it's not personal. He has a go. He'll have a go at Dennis Irwin. Listen, get rid of that ball. Or stop. When I said, pass it back to me, or it comes back to me, and it hasn't come back to me. He's going on like it's like a boxing match. He's going right at him. I told you. And his face is getting red. And then at halftime, you'll see them walking in with his hand round him. And he's telling him, listen, mate, we're still mates, aren't we? You know, but that's how much do you want it? And then it becomes something where your defenders then know you. I talk about a lot of part of my philosophy is when you're working as a unit, and I don't like it. I hate it being a formation that we're playing 1-4-3-2. No. It's all part of, if we're playing four at the back, it's five. We're a unit together. We're all a unit together. And I say to know your defenders, especially if trialists are coming in and you don't, find their name first. Know their name at the beginning. So that build a relationship. Have a little cluster together. Because you're the leader here. You're the leader. As I said it before about that wheel. You're the one driving that wheel. So have a little cluster before the game starts. Listen, this is what we haven't really played together, so I'm not quite sure. The ones who you've played together, to a certain extent, they know how you work. They don't even need to look back to know where you're going to be. If you're supporting on the left-hand side or the right-hand side or through the middle, they know the weight of pass because you've built that over the years. But the ones who don't, can you let them know? Your striker, okay? Or your striker, his body language alone needs to be able to tell you where and where. We speak to whereby attackers and the goalkeeper, they talk together. In regards to the attacker, might say, listen, I want it on my chest or I want it on the right-hand side. You just put it in there. If you see I'm on a 1v1, I'll get into that space, you know, or give it to my left foot, right foot, which side, more detail. So there's all, if I'm dropping it into the middle, where would you like it? My eights. So I'm working on both eights. Which one's going, I already know which. So it's like the communication then leads into how I deliver, what kind of club I got. It's like a golf swing. Have I got the one that I'm really going to chip it into? What weight am I going to put onto it? Which so the communication and the footwork, everything goes together when you're in possession. When you're out of possession, you know, so there's a lot to it. But obviously, I'm probably talking about, we're talking about the higher end there. But I'm so sure from the base, there's so much that coaches can take out of this.
Yeah, but even in what you see, so talking about the higher end. But this is the thing I want people to understand here is that these are still things that apply at the bottom end, and sometimes I do challenge the notion of coaches in grassroots saying, you know, that they're about the enjoyment. I say, okay, cool, but that's fine. I get that, but what's your role as the coach? Your role as the coach, in my opinion, is about developing the players. Yeah, now, yeah. How will a player know that they want development if they don't know that's an option for them?
How will they know? Yeah, if they don't know. So you've got to make them know.
That's an option for them. Yeah. You can't just sit there and say, yeah, they're enjoying the game. They're enjoying it. Okay, fine. But how long is it?
But maybe they don't want to develop. maybe they just want to play with it, and that's an important one today, and that's another really important one. Well, before I came on here, I was just speaking to a mum whose boy is on trial at Cambridge. I've been mentoring through, and parents nowadays, they seem to find parents, not the player, they kind of find it interesting. To it's become a common thing. We're going football on a Saturday and I'm going to meet Jane, I'm meeting Abra, I'm meeting all those guys, and we're going to be talking about what happened down or EastEnders, and it's now become a common thing that it's now become, and we don't, and we're not thinking
about it's a social event for them.
Pardon?
It's a social event for them.
Yes. And we're not thinking about the child anymore. Yeah, my boy, he's going to play football, then we're going to go home, we're going to go KFC, so it becomes. So that's where the difference is. So when you said something about development, maybe the mom, the child doesn't want, or it's the child who's not knowing that he wants to develop, or maybe they're not at the point there yet, or the mom's not helping him to realize that we're playing this football because he wants to develop, or the coach is not or the coach is being selfish because these kids have to pay a certain amount of money for the gear this week, that week, and stuff like that. So there's a whole heap of stuff that at the grassroots level, we need to be thinking of, you know? Yeah.
100%. And I think, you know, a lot of that is in terms of managing that relationship with the parents so that they understand what they're getting from the environment you're bringing them into, right? And I think that bit's really key, because if you do, like I said, if you don't give the player, I only started thinking about this stuff when I've worked with players in the past who, I can think of one or two in the top of my head at the moment where it's like, the season, like, let's just say I've come in as a new coach. The season before, they were playing in a different position or a different area of the pitch, or they were asked to do something completely different, or they might have been in the second or third team. And I've seen something in them that I said, nah, dude, I need you here. And all of a sudden they get some success from it, or it's something that they've never considered, right? And then it just makes me think, like, obviously, it just, you know, how as coaches we're so different and what we've identified. And this is the one thing I always say is, and it'll be interesting to get your thoughts on this, is as coaches, when we look at players and we say this player is either good enough, not good enough, or if they're whatever they are, is it because we believe that, or are we subconsciously using that language to describe how well we think we can impact that player? Does that make sense?
That is deep. Yeah, that's very deep. I think when we're saying a player is not good enough, I've seen it over the years and through experience that this game that we love, I think we have, is it a subconscious bias?
Yeah,
that this is what we've seen before, and we know that this and this, you're not going to make it, you're not going to. And I've had to listen. I do some work at West Ham with the development squad, the under 6 and 8s. I do that on a Monday, and I've gone in there and I've seen something totally different. It's blown my 30 years of experience away, and that's why I said I keep learning all the time. And there's a There's Dale who's there. Dale's been there for 30 years, an older guy. But he's seen the Lampards come through. He's seen the top players, all the top players. He's seen them come through this. And now he wants to start talking to me about goalkeepers. And I'm thinking, when I first went in, and this is why we've got... And then I started to realise that, listen, this guy, I could easily just say, okay, because he's experienced, but I didn't just leave that alone. But it's my experience that helped me to have to be able to accept what he was saying to me. So there was this a goalkeeper who came in, 7 years old, really big, never been coached. And we take four every year. And there were three others, really technical, good goalkeepers and stuff. And Dale said to me, when he started asking me, because after every session, he would call me and ask me, what do I think about really bang on his game? What do I think about this goalkeeper, that the goalkeeper who I said is the big one? I said, nah, he's not ready yet. Maybe we should just keep him around and stuff. And what I'm talking to you about, this is within 3 months. This is within 3 months. This goalkeeper that I'm talking about now, that I said, listen, just keep him around. Now he's had coaching. He is a different. You can imagine an underrate. Obviously, he's nowhere near the, but you can obviously see. And if it was down to me, I would have got rid of him. But Dale, he's seen this kind of thing before. He's seen different things come in before, and he's seen different personalities, different shapes and stuff. And this is where I said it then comes back down to the influences of what we need, what we want as what we need for a goalkeeper to come in. So now I look at this kid now, and when we were talking about it, I think it was yesterday, that who are our top three, that boy was one of them. He's become one of them. And I'm talking to you, Yas, from nothing, just the shape. But over the, what you'll ask me, what have I seen over the 3 months? That is, number one, I've seen him take things on board. He takes things on board very quickly.
It's so important. Just to pause you there, Reece. I was working with a group of coaches recently, and supporting a club around their recruitment processes. And I said, look, they're like, oh yeah, some of these players aren't good enough. I said, it's not about whether they're good enough. Can they be coached?
Yes.
Absolutely. Now, if you don't want to look at whether they can be coached or not, I am questioning whether you feel you can coach.
Absolutely.
Right. And it's sometimes a bit of a look in the mirror, right, for the coaches to think about. So, and then this is why I asked the question. If we say the player is not really good enough, or the player is not ready, or the whatever we say about the players, is that really what we think, or is it just a reflection on how much we feel we can have an impact in that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said it comes with experience, because I could easily think about an impact if I was there and think, listen, this kid is not good enough. However, that's why I wanted to say at the beginning of your question, where I said that football is a game of opinions, and we can easily use our opinions and our experience to kind of judge people. When it comes at the early stage, one of the things I didn't say to you when I was at Arsenal, we used to have bare fights, and that was the beginning of my career. When it was time to sit down and retain and release, we used to have bare fights. And the reason why we had bare fights, because number one, I'm a realist, and the other person who we had to have it with was someone who was friends with the parents. So when I'm thinking, I've come in now, and I'm saying that, no, she's not good enough, and you're saying by hook or by crook, she's going to be in there already. And so look, there's a whole heap of things that can cause, but I think the best way around is what academies do now, which is there's a lot of, and that's part of what never used to happen back in those days, where it would just be someone who will say, yeah, that I think there's a lot of different opinions and different people working with different players rather than one coach working with different players. You know, there's one head coach now, but there's different coaches who work with these players, and you get their opinion. And it builds the bigger picture, even though you've got your what you think, but you're the experienced one, because over years you've seen things. So you can now put everybody's opinions. So let's say for me, I'm a friend of the parent. When we're sitting down within that discussion, we all take into consideration that I'm saying that I like Jack because I've got a relationship with the parent, you know? And then you put into consideration, even though I'm making valid points, but I'm still making valid points but I've still got a relationship with the parents.
Because yeah.
That's the closest we can get to not getting things wrong.
Yeah.
Even with that, we'll still get things wrong. You know,
yeah.
There are still players that we've released over the years that we've killed their career. They've lost the enjoyment of football or the desire to want to play. But I think there's more of the ones who have made it more than the ones.
But this is the thing, though, Larry. Sometimes I've got a question, and there's two parts to it. First of all, on that last bit you said, right, that bias piece. And sometimes I work with a lot of coaches, obviously, of supporting them in their development, and then observing them coach, and then, you know, a lot of it's about them sharing their context with me around who they think their strong players are and who they think the ones are who are struggling. And do you know the question I always ask them that it just leaves them stumped a little bit, and it's like, oh snap, I never actually thought about it. It's interesting, all the players that you're saying are strong, you know, are the more coachable players, just out of curiosity, do they tend to get it when you explain things? They say, yeah, maybe this is telling you something.
Yeah. What, do they tend to get it when...
Yeah, as in, are they the ones that are easiest coach? So like, for instance, I might just tell you to do something, you just crack on with it.
Or you're the one who's still asking, what did you say again? Or don't quite get it, or watching?
But again, I ask it from a perspective to challenge thought, right? And provoke thought. And the question I'm really asking him is, well, is it because they're easier to coach that you like them? Because the other ones means that you're going to have to change as a coach to get through to them.
Absolutely.
Right.
When I was in my younger coaching days, I wanted the easier ones, you know, because I know the easier ones I can... My bosses can see I've influenced them quick enough and stuff.
Mm.
But now I'm always looking for a challenge. Honestly, I'm looking for. We at the beginning of coaching, back in those days again, it goes back to some of your questions. How has coaching changed? There used to be a piece of paper which said evaluation after your coaching and all that kind of thing. And I just used to, every single time, I used to just put words in there. You know, I used to just fill it up and put words in there. But the more experienced you become, you're honest with yourself. You have to be honest with yourself in regards, he questioned me. Did I give him a right answer? Was that space big enough? Was it small enough? Right now, I'm not shy. I don't shy away from moving things, even if I'm being recorded.
Because
that shows the better coach.
I think you're spot on. And it just takes me back to even at the start of my journey. Like, one of the things I think really helped me develop early on, and I didn't realize this until I reflect back, is I was comfortable dealing with players' questions.
Yes.
So when they asked me a question, I don't know what brought the mindset to me or what brought the thought to me, but it was, I viewed it as, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Because the way I look at it now is, if a player asked me a question, they're engaged.
Yeah.
Which means if I nail this question for them, I've got them. Yeah. They're hooked. And it's only going to take a couple of questions where I've satisfied them with an answer that actually makes sense and is credible before they start asking less questions and start trusting me more.
Yes, right? Yes.
Now, it doesn't mean I want them to stop.
Trust, yes.
You understand? I don't want them to stop asking the questions because the questions keep me on my toes I want to be sure, and is a great quote, and it says, you know, if you teach someone, you get to learn it twice.
Yes.
Right?
Because you've gone through it again.
Exactly. And the second time around, you want to go through it again in a way where you want to make sure that you've got this right, because you're now passing this knowledge on to someone else.
Yes.
Right? And I think from that perspective, you want to nail that. So that was the first part. And then the second part was almost, if your players aren't asking you questions and they're not challenging you,
is their learning taking place at all?
Is their learning taking place? Right? But more importantly, Coming back to what you said previously, I want to work with the ones that ask the questions I'm that player who would ask the questions.
Yes.
I want to know, why have you got me doing this? Because if you can't tell me why you got me doing this, in my eyes, you're done.
Well, hold that thought there. So there's two different people. You liked it at the early stage of your career. You liked asking questions. I wanted to get away from it. It's over through experience that I thought the only way that I can learn as a coach. So there might be two different people here who's listening to this thinking that, okay, I had to learn. I had to make sure that I understood my craft. I understood, I knew what I wanted to be able to be comfortable in getting to the point where you got to early. And that's probably why your coach education has really taken off in regards to where you are now. And I was someone who, at the beginning, I just wanted to get on with it and not like those questions. But over the years, I started to read and I started to understand that knowledge is power here. So I need to, and I'm at a point now where I'm not even scared of even getting questions wrong or questions that they ask wrong, because it helps me. I've got the skill now. So even if I'm wrong, I can rephrase it in a way.
But I think it's maturity as well. It's willing to accept that you haven't got the answers to everything. And I think that's part of it, right? So I think the way I could, even if we talk about coach education, coach development, like even when I'm working with coaches, I always say, look, the idea here isn't for you to agree with me. That's not what we're working towards. I'm not trying to get you to agree with me. I'm not trying to get you to be a mini version of me either. I don't want you to be a copycat of me, a replica of me. But what I do want you to do is get to a point where you know why you're doing what you're doing, and the way that you're doing it is been considered. Because, and it's not about you convincing me otherwise either.
Yeah.
Because just like yourself, you've got behind you almost 30 years experience. I've got 15 years experience, but there's a reason why I think the way I do, because I've seen things and I've gone through things which have formed my own views on what coaching should or could look like.
Yes.
You're not going to change my views on how I think. You can give me something different to consider, but there's been a lot of thought and consideration gone into the way I think about things now.
Yeah.
So I'm not expecting you to change it. And your job
changing
shouldn't
your views, they're almost saying that you need to copy them. And you've already established what your philosophy is, and nothing's going to change that. You're not saying you're not willing to learn. Of course you're willing to learn. You're taking things on board. Yeah, that's right. Precisely. You're taking things on board. You're adding it to what you've got. Yeah,
precisely. And you know, and the beauty and obviously sharing information is another great quote. And if I've got an apple, Larry, and you've got an apple, if we trade our apples, how many apples do we have each? We still got the one, right? But if I've got an idea and you've got an idea and we trade our ideas, now we've doubled them.
Yeah, we've doubled them. Absolutely.
Right.
You can only be better for that. Yeah.
Precisely. So let's just keep sharing ideas. And, you know, that's what I'm all about.
I think that's important for me. I'm learning every single day. I'm learning. And as I said, when I see Dale, who's 30, he's had 30 or 40 years experience in dealing with what he deals with. He's a specialist at what he deals with. I can't say, because I'm a goalkeeping coach and I know everything about goalkeepers, I don't know how a child, I don't know how, obviously, I haven't seen a child develop. So if he's saying that I've seen 1,000 childs develop in this way, this child is coming and he's seen a different child develop in this way. And when I'm saying, nah, look at him, his legs look so thinny, he's not even talking. Who knows, somewhere 40 years down the line, he might start talking and start being that person. And if someone who's experienced it says, listen, I've seen 5 kids over the years who've started to talk from, they're not talking because they're a goalkeeper, but then why don't we give that child a chance? You know, rather than saying, we're going to get rid of him. It's never going to be. Even with the height thing, sometimes, I think for me, that's my philosophy now in regards to, but unless you become a technical director or you become a head of coaching, and you can't affect that. You can only have that philosophy. For me, is I've seen kids who have become over 6 foot, and their mom and dad are really short, because there's other stuff in the family. There's their uncles, their aunts are massive people.
Oh, you know? I'm looking at my kids. I'm saying my kids are almost taller than me.
Absolutely. You see, imagine that. And you know, so I think, especially with the goalkeeping side of things, for me, I think we need to. I think the clubs. I know heads roll, and you've got to keep your job, and you've got to put money on the table, and all that. But I feel for the goalkeeping department and the goalkeeping union, the more establishments can give maybe just a little bit more time, you know, more time than what we're giving now before we release kids. I think the better that goalkeeping union as a whole will become. We keep talking about projects, but a project comes in, then 2 months later the project's gone. It's like, that's not a project. A project is a project. A project is someone you're giving time to work with. You feel that they've got potential.
Nice, spot on. Larry, conscious of time, so I'm just going to ask you one final question. You know, if there's something that you wish coaches listening to this could walk away with, what would that be? And I'm going to ask you it in this way. Knowing what you know now, with all the experiences that you've had, what are some of the top things or the key things for you that if you knew them at the start of your journey, you feel like you would have just gone clear?
This will probably sound, it will probably sound bonkers, but it's one thing that I will leave people. It probably links into football, but you can take it as you want. You can link it into football how you want. Is people listening to this need to know that there's a reason why we're alive, why we're here now. You're not a coincidence. You're not a mistake. Why me and you are sitting here? It's been ordained before that we will be where we are. It's been ordained that you will have the knowledge of what you will have where you are now. It's been ordained that I will be where I am now. So the first thing is understand that there's a reason why we're alive. And I talked about purpose at the beginning of this. And our purpose, for instance, let me give you an example. My purpose is to come and be into football. And I've been in football. It's like when I was at Arsenal, I felt that was the do all and end all of me. I've got to where I've got to. This is it. But no, it's taken me to educate myself, to understand about people. I've now started to understand about people more. If I see you, I don't judge anymore. I spend time with you before I can have something about you. And we can easily take that into football. We can easily take that. But we have to be conscious that we're not a mistake. We haven't just dropped and found ourselves in football and found ourselves in the position we're playing or the leadership's, whatever area where we're leading. And let's try and make the best of it. And going back to making the best of it is by knowing what we want, knowing how we need to get to what we want, and knowing that we can't do it by ourselves, that we need people. And at the end of it, knowing that we are in a people's business, we're working with people all the time, and we're regardless of what position we're playing in, what sport we do. I know there's a lot to unpack in what I've just said, but honestly, if we can get the grabs of knowing the reason why we're alive, having purpose, and our purpose might not be the end of it. Even you being doing what you do now, you don't know what your experience will do to help someone else in the future or to take you. It might even take you somewhere else. You don't know. It could, knowing what you know, it could eventually take you into the business world, the Canary Wharf side of things. And, you know, only because you've allowed yourself to lead, you've allowed yourself to take things on board. over life, and you've rendered your experience to other people too. And that alone, you never know who's watching, bro. And that's what I'll leave you with.
100%, and that's spot on, Larry. I thank you for your time, my friend.
Thank really you appreciate too. It. Yeah. Catch up really very soon, bro.
No, 100%, man.
Yeah.
You look after yourself and you take care. Speak to you soon, man.
Nice one, bro.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.